Hello and welcome to this week's Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB and pretty much everything really. I'm Amy Packham and we are still nervously looking over our shoulders in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it was a case of so near and yet so far as Christian Eriksen broke Albion hearts in the 87th minute after an impressive rearguard action nearly added a point to the total what we got at Wolves last Saturday. So then, so three games left and 3 points above the drop zone. And with us now playing, not playing until this evening, we will know how Cardiff have got on at Fulham prior to a kick-off against Newcastle today. All we do know is that 3 points would be absolutely massive in our hopes to avoid the trapdoor. And if we were to win today, it would involve scoring our first goal in the league for 49 days. 49 days. Fortunately, we've got a goal scorer in the studio today, haven't we?
Yeah, sort of.
Well, that is with me as ever is, of course, Alan Wears. And joining us today is a man who will be appearing in the Brighton Fringe this year in a play called He Shot, He Scored. I wonder who that's about. Please welcome Mr. Gary Jack. Also joining us today is a man who knows all about scoring goals for the Albion, and also he has a play about him in the Brighton Fringe this year called He Shot, He Scored. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Peter Ward.
Good afternoon.
Welcome back, Peter. How are you?
Thank you. Lovely. Beautiful.
Now, if you might be able to detect, most of us in the room here have got a hangover you can photograph.
Speak for yourself, mate.
It's and because last night was, of course, the Robert Eaton Memorial Fun Game, which was held at Worthing last night. And Al, tell us what happened.
It rained. No, it was good fun. It was the first time we'd held it there. We'd been plugging it on the show a few times. We spent a few years at Lewis before that, but you know, change of scenery. It seemed to work. There was a lot of people turned up. A good crowd of 380 came along. It was a pretty mad game. I think Wardy himself will tell you in a minute that it's actually a nicer pitch to play on, better surface and what have you. But it's an exciting game for the neutrals. Some absolutely dreadful goals. Excitement. mad penalty
goal.
Shootout. The number of times the crossbar was hit. And, you know, there's hitting the bar that you would know, and there's hitting the bar on the pitch. It was that kind of night. And the final score was Brighton 2, Crystal Palace 2, and Brighton win 4-3 on penalties.
Now, Wardy, you've played in a few of these Renf games now. How many goals is it you've actually scored?
Two. But that's I don't play much, 10-15 minutes. But it was cold. It was cold last night. I've never been so cold for a long, long time.
That's because you live in Florida.
Well, it's true, but even when we played the Rent before, it's cold. But last night with the rain and the wind, it was windy and cool. I couldn't feel my legs. They turned blue. I thought I turned Scottish.
So, as a player, someone who's out there, I mean, tell us about what you thought of the match at Worthing.
I thought it was good. The first half, we were with the wind, and you know, the boys were playing the through balls, and there was just no chance of chasing them. You know, I mean, they're too hard. But and Palace should have scored early on. They missed an open goal, hit the ball like we did after, like you said. And then we had numerous chances. I mean, we could have been four or five. But the boys kept missing. I think on purpose, just to make it more exciting. And then second half. Same story, back and forth, and they went one up. We went 2-1 up, and right at the death, they made it 2-2.
Can you describe Albion's equalising goal?
Fantastic goal. There's a cross. You saw the Millwall goal Solly March scored that. Well, that was actually an attempt of a good save at Millwall. This one, no, only did he catch it, drop it, and threw it in. It was just unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it.
And where was it kicked in from? Pretty much a corner flag, wasn't
it?
Now, Gary, you were there last night as well. That was your first Renf game?
It was, yes.
How did you find it?
I thought it was really, really competitive, which I was pleased with. And I was also surprised with the facilities there. The stand was great at Worthing. And the crowd were enthused by the whole game.
Is that
a euphemism for drunk?
No, that wasn't just the crowd that. Yes, I did think that it was 7 points to 6 in your favour, Al.
You mean actually outdrunk AD? Now there's a story to be had, but it was a great. We don't have a final figure as to how much was raised last night, but we'll get that as soon as possible. We know it's comfortably into four figures, and in total maybe even into five. But we'll let you know as soon as possible. But we've got to welcome you into the studio, Gary. Thanks for coming in.
A raw virgin,
as we say. So before we start talking about all other things, tell us about your Albion supporting history.
Well, like most lads, it goes back an awful long time to when I was a kid, which is the Goldstone days. I guess my first game was probably in the 60s, so you can work out how old I might be. Late 60s, and then through the 70s is where I was going most Saturdays. If I wasn't watching football on a Saturday at Haywards Heath with my father, he was taking me to the Goldstone if the Haywards Heath were playing away. So it was through. I guess I grew up on some great forwards, ignoring Peter for the moment. But
we'll do that.
Well, Kit Napier would have been the first. That sort of era. Kit Napier at the front. Stuart Henderson, Norman Gall, Eddie Spirit. Oh, mm-hmm. Crikey, John Templeman. Mm-hmm. Guys that are now a lot older.
John Templeman doesn't look a lot older, to be
does
honest.
Does he not? No. Well, his hair was. The cry of Shirley used to go up as he went as he canted down the wing.
Yeah.
From that sort of era, and then as a teenager, watching people like Peter Wardy and Mellor play, mm-hmm. Which is why I'm here, I guess, really.
Sure. So, I mean, in all this, so we're talking 50 plus years of supporting, and we don't wish to embarrass the fellow next to you just in case, but in all those 50 years, can you pick out a one favourite, not necessarily the best player, but your favourite player?
Before Peter came along, I wanted to play next to Stevie Piper. Okay. That's what I wanted to do. He was a Brighton boy. And then Peter came along, and to start with, I thought it'd be great as a kid, I wanted to play beside Peter. Mm. Yeah, that's. And then I realised there was no way that I would ever be good enough to do that, so I'd have to play somewhere in midfield and win the ball and give it to somebody that was going to O'Sullivan, who was then going to give it to Mellor, and then Peter can get on the end of it. Yeah.
You had it all sussed.
I realised I couldn't play alongside. I was never going to be that twin striker.
Now, Peter, it's a big day for you today as well, because you're going to see a lot of your old mates today.
Looking forward to it, yes. Not seeing a lot of them for quite a while. I mean, I saw Nobby and a couple of them with the Goldstone at the Theatre Royal. Yep. Mm. The 20 years of Goldstone, whatever.
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but there's some I haven't seen for 40 years. So it's... in fact, last night I was saying... it must have been about 20 years ago when I was playing, and somebody said, "What? 40? Oh my God, 40 years. Yeah,
but obviously we're playing Newcastle today, and that it ties in nicely with a winning promotion up there 40 years ago. What can you remember about that day?
It was a great day. We had a load of fans up there.
About 10,000, I believe.
We went 3-0 up, and at half-time, Muller just went crazy, and we... Nobby's trying to calm him down. We were 3-0 up, but he was going nuts. It was unbelievable. He was shaking.
Was he nervous, or were we playing badly?
Yeah, I think he was just nervous because we're 3-0 up.
Right.
And then they scored 3-1, but I don't think there was any doubt. We did great. It was brilliant.
Sure.
Of course, he scored in that game as well, so.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. for a change, yeah. No, I completely forgot what I was going to say. No, it's actually just thinking of sort of like tying back to the rent thing. Actually, what people don't necessarily realise is that, and I've got to say thanks to Pete Stone, who is the chairman of Worthing Football Club. And I think probably one thing people don't realise, and I was getting some lovely stories out of him, he was Steve Piper's son-in-law. Married to Steve Piper's daughter. So getting lovely stories about Steve, you know, from him. So it's kind of a nice sort of joining the dots that we've got there. So
that's cool.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, I don't think we've heard your take on him, because I mean, we've heard Rollo talk about him. What are your memories of Steve Piper?
He's a great midfielder. Yeah. Won the ball, he could score goals now and again. Yeah, he's a great lad.
Mm.
And he was just Brighton through and through. He was very sad when we heard he'd gone, but yeah, he's a great lad.
Sure.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we do actually have to talk about the last week. I'd like to talk about the all the goals we scored this week.
Moving on.
So, obviously, I mean, we're talking about it as a whole. Obviously, we went to Wolves and we managed to add a point to the total there. It wasn't the greatest display. I mean, Peter, you watched it at like a stupid o'clock in the morning in Florida. What was your take on it?
We defended well. I mean, it was a battle. I mean, Wolves did have quite a few chances to, you know. Mm. But we rode our luck, and the system worked, and we got a great point. And then, obviously, Tottenham, we did the same thing. But what do you
make of the tactics, though? I mean, there was very, very little attacking intent in both of those games.
It's difficult, I think. He's got them set up for defending, and obviously, you've got to have fast players to get out. Mm. And we just didn't get out quick enough. I mean, I think everybody was just scared that if we went too far forward, that they're going to break us down.
Leave ourselves open.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing. Obviously, you've been keeping up with watching the Albion over the, you know, through the season. I'm sure you get probably most of the games live. Now, obviously, mm-hmm. we get to see the games as well. And the first half of the season, we look pretty good, pretty comfortable. You know, guessing results. I mean, it was in October. We've got three wins in a row. You know, that's a kind of a relatively rarity. And then you see the last sort of three or four games, and it's almost like we've stopped playing. Now, as someone who's probably been there and been in a team that goes through a rough patch. Is there any sort of rhyme or... You know what's going on in the changing room, but, you know, for the fans who are kind of feeling a bit sort of mystified about it, is there any rhyme or reason that you could ever offer to say, what on earth's going on here?
I think the early on in the season, I mean, Murray was doing great. He was getting service, you know, scoring goals, and I don't think he's had any service whatsoever recently. We're just not good enough getting out the back, and I possibly... believe that some of the players might be a little scared of going too far forward in case we do lose the ball, the breakers down, and they're going to get blamed for losing the ball and the other team scoring.
Mm. Okay, I mean, what would you do to change it if you were the manager?
I play two very fast wide players.
Well, we have got fast wide players, but they're not. But basically, if they're
getting sent off,
and they keep running down blind alleys because they've got no one to give the ball to when they're Murray's not getting up into the box with them because he's having to come looking for the ball. The midfielders aren't going
it's
forwards.
Tough. If Murray comes for the ball, you've got to have somebody else who's going more, forward past him. He holds it up well. Knocks it out, but we've just got to do stuff quicker. Mm-hmm. I mean, today.
Today, yeah. Okay. Gary, you've been watching the Albion. I mean, you know, whether it's from afar or on the telly. I mean, what have you made of what's been going on?
I think a lot of it is down to confidence. And at the start of the season, there were results, whether it was nicking a 1-0 win or, but still playing. And at that stage, everyone was saying, this is really good, but we're doing exceptionally well. And then suddenly you're going a little bit of a slump. Confidence goes, and it is. It's, you know, do we want to press? Are we're going to hold that line and hold it well? And last-ditch tackling, you know, Duncan Duffy throwing themselves around, almost kamikaze-ly. But it's riding your luck. And against Tottenham, if they, one hit the inside of the post and shot along the line, a couple of good saves, you could have been 3-0, could have been 3-0 down.
Yeah, I mean, at Spurs, I mean, defending was just resilient. We put our bodies and everything on the line. And we did have chances in that game, but at this level, you've got to take those chances,
but
Peter.
Also, you encourage the opposition to come forward because you're not clearing the ball, not holding it up.
Well, so, we were just giving it back to them.
Yeah, and come at us again.
Yeah, more of a panic mode instead of trying to keep the ball.
It was like a training exercise, defensively attack, though, wasn't it?
To be fair, we're quite good at it.
Well, you know?
I mean, when we're playing teams like Manchester City, I mean, let's rewind all the way back. It seems a long time ago, but nearly two seasons to the very first game in the Premier League. You know, we got schooled. You know, we've been used to winning games, and then we have this enormous leap up. We probably played Manchester City at just about the right time because they hadn't got into the stride of their season. But you saw that, you know, we weren't going to get the ball too much. And one tiny mistake, and that's it. They're off and running, you know, the hare's running, and they'll stick it in the back of the net. And that's where you get to see. And I think it's a lesson we learnt very well. I mean, we got on board very quickly. We realised the depth of our limitations, which weren't that deep at all. But so we operated to the best of them.
Yeah,
but even now, we're in a different place where we're not actually operating to the best of our abilities.
The thing is, Al, when you saw that lineup on Tuesday night, you commented that this is kamikaze.
Well, I thought it was
far from it.
Well, No, he didn't play in a kamikaze way, because when you see some of those attacking players, you don't necessarily appreciate them for their defensive qualities. We know that Solly March can get back. I mean, I'm just thinking Izquierdo never gets back, or he's not as good a defender as other wide players. I mean, Solly March, and we said this on the show before, Solly March is a fella who does as he's told. To the best of his abilities, he does as he's told. He is Chris's, probably, you know, his favourite sort of automaton almost. Mm. And there's probably certain parts of his game that are maddening for the other team, because he does have an awful lot of skill, and yet, you know, as we've said before, we've yet to see a lot more of him. And at the moment, I won't say his talents are wasted as a defender. He has to play as the player. But, you know, it would be great to see, you know, Solly, for instance, this afternoon attacking Newcastle United.
I mean, if you look at the personnel that we've got, Peter, I mean, I've been saying for a while that the best formation that with the personnel we've got would be 3-5-2.
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
Well, yeah, I mean, but you've got to have the two wide wing backs that they've got to get back.
And who would your wing backs be then? Well, a pair of
Solly.
Solly
and Bernardo.
Gary?
If you kept playing that, then yes, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, today, I can see us just doing the same thing as we did at Wolves and Tottenham until.
What, parking a bus?
15, 20 minutes to go and just see what happens. Or, I mean, we go at them for the first 10, 15 minutes just to see how what system they're playing. And
I can't feel we had. I can't help feeling we had that attitude against Southampton. You know, what we have, we hold, a point or two. They need the win more than we do, blah, blah, blah. They get their goal, and it's only in the last 20 minutes we start playing, because before that we were abject. So it's a case of do we go at them, try and get a couple of early goals. Do you remember those goals? try and get a couple of early goals. Or you just, like, as Peter said, hold them and then just really go at them for the last 20 minutes. Mm. Personally, I'd rather we got the goals in first, just so we know they've got them on the scoreboard.
Well, I mean, we could always do that thing. There was that game in Germany a few years ago where the whole stand behind the goal were given arrows pointing at the goal. So maybe the North Stand needs to do that today.
It'll lift a lot of pressure off everyone.
Absolutely.
If we get a goal. Yeah. We just need one goal.
What the last two games have shown is that we've got our defensive mojo back. You know, we know how to do. It's like, again, once again, the early days of the Premier League with us, where, you know, we've been very, very disciplined and rigid and organised defensively without too many attacking intentions. Mm. And it's gained us the odd point here and there, maybe where we didn't deserve it. And it's ugly. And other teams' fans might moan, their problem, not ours. And it's not great for us to watch. And if we survive in the Premier League, it's going to be the same again next year, so we're just going to have to get used to it. It's, you know, like it or lump it, and you know, 20-odd thousand people have bought their season tickets. It's going to be the same again, but we are playing those last two games are playing to our strengths. Now you'd like to think we're going to see some sort of breakout on account of the fact that us scoring no goals today is going to be no good for us.
Mm. But I mean, there's going to be an awful lot of pressure on that team today, Peter.
I think, to be honest with you, we'll know the Cardiff result, won't we? So
yeah.
It all depends on that result, the way Chris reacts, I think.
I was about to say, I hope it doesn't affect it. I just hope that, you know, we just do the best we can anyway.
Well, scoreboard pressure, isn't it?
We need goals, that's it. Yeah. There's nothing else to say, is there, you know?
So how are your knees then, mate?
Dodgy now after last night. Jeez.
Okay, well, I mean, we did create some chances in that Spurs game, particularly in the first half, where Andoni got through and took, in my view, made the wrong decision. He should have shot early or gone wider.
Everyone's a critic.
Well, I think my theory is he was looking for a penalty rather than actually trying to score a goal, which is.
Is that? I mean, you've seen him, Gary. Is that a level of criticism that you can actually put at Andoni? Is sometimes he's just a bit too much playing the man and not the ball?
No, I think that would be a little unfair. I like him in the side, and I like the way that he runs. I like the space that he creates, and he'll work. Perhaps he doesn't hold it up.
Could be in his mind as well about, you know, no goals going in.
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, if you look at the goal that he scored against Palace at the Amex, when he raced clear and he got, admittedly there was a Tompkins had a little bit of a moment there, but he got to the edge of the 6 yard box and played it across the keeper, and he had the opportunity to do that there, but he went central and allowed the defenders to catch up with him.
Are you talking about the big run that he had from when it was played through?
Yeah,
I actually thought he did really well then. I think it was actually very, very good defending. Actually, I'm going to credit the defender here. I know you're saying that he gave the defender the opportunity. Yeah, he gave him the opportunity to do it, but I don't necessarily disagree. I mean,
a confident player would take that early.
Yeah, but I think again, let's ask the striker in the room. What would you have done, Pete? Would you have taken it earlier? Would you have taken that extra touch?
Lobbed the keeper.
I'd have probably done it earlier.
Yeah. Okay.
Or gone round the keeper.
Yeah.
Does anyone actually do that anymore? No one really takes it around the keeper anymore.
Well, they do, and then go down anyway.
Well, this is true. Yeah. But it was. But there was another opportunity that Andoni had, which was. I'm not quite sure. Was it a bad ball from Jehan Bash, or was it just?
I don't remember.
When he flashed the ball across the box, and
it's a bad ball.
That's what I thought. Good, excellent. Wasn't just me then.
Tell me about actually the game itself. You visited the new Spurs ground for the first time. Tell us about it.
That was magnificent. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
There's a lot of teething problems. Obviously, the staff didn't know what they were doing half the time. But
believe me, there's places where that have been up for a long time and they don't know what they're doing.
And no one knew where the TV gantry was. I had to 20 stewards. I asked. I counted them 20. No one knew where it was. But it was
right.
But
the TV gantry? Is that the same place as the press box?
No. They've got two. They've got the written press and they've got the broadcast media. One's on the top deck and one's on the lower deck.
Right.
So it's all. But so, no one knew that.
So for all the bells and whistles they talked about with this ground,
it was fantastic.
It's worth it.
Well,
what I
did actually get to see was because of no one knowing where it was, I had a good look around the whole stadium and what the concourses there were absolutely fantastic. They had live bands playing on each concourse.
Oh wow!
And the bars were proper bars.
And they got the beer coming up from the bottom of the glass.
Yeah,
the
gravity. Yeah, I saw one or two people pressing the bottom and getting wet, which is fantastic. But you know, I mean, it was. Of the new grounds, I mean, it was absolutely fantastic. It looked amazing.
Well, you know, we interviewed Paul Barber a couple of weeks ago, and we said, "Is that you know you've had a look around? Is there stuff that we can take from there? That you know, obviously, a lot of people pinch ideas from the Amex, but is there stuff from there that we can pinch from them?"
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's
the team.
Yeah. But there's certainly things. I mean, the bars that they've got there could be replicated here. The outlets could be replicated. But I mean, it would mean giving the concourses a complete overhaul. So it's unlikely that's actually going to happen.
And what about the beer coming from the bottom thing? Do you think that'll happen? Would you want it to? Would you drink stuff that actually comes out that way?
Yeah.
If you serve Harvey's that way, it's just going to froth up like you wouldn't believe.
Well, not if it's Bright.
Sorry?
Not if it's Bright.
Oh, okay. All right.
But yeah, no, I mean, it was fantastic, and I'm sure that that Paul Barber will like look at take things from there and think, actually, yes, we could actually copy that.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it is fantastic, and hopefully, touch wood, we'll get the opportunity to go there again next year.
Oh, yeah.
But moving on, it was a resilient backline at Spurs. But it was pierced right in the 87th minute. Spurs do tend to score a lot of late goals, and it was just heartbreaking.
Is that
it?
Your notion of taking it early? Did you see it, Gary?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. And?
Oh, well, as you say, resilient, but kamikaze at times and riding your luck as well. And that's from a non-playing spectator watching on the television from the Midlands. the two banks are holding it out. Murray up front as he was for most of the game. Mm. By himself, but then there was no let out, no get out, and you're inside. You're
invited. That's when
you've got
to put someone up front who's quick.
Yeah, but I mean, do you think it was a mistake not bringing another striker in January? In retrospect,
I suppose you can say that now. with one minute to go, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it worked.
Yeah. Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Eddie Packham. I'm here with Alan Wares. I'm here with Peter Ward, and I am here with the man who is in his shot he's called.
Thank you, that's me.
That's you.
It's his name's Gary Jack, in case you've forgotten.
I hadn't you? Yes.
But this is not the first time this month that you've actually forgotten our guests' names.
I know.
It's all right. As Wardy has quite rightly called out. No, it's Gary has called out. Yes, yeah. We're winning on the beers count.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah.
It was a good night. Anyway, we are brought to you.
How do you know?
This is true. We are brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. And I've got a brilliant shirt of the week, which I'm just going to hand over to Gary. And if you could describe that for me.
It's a brilliant football shirt. It's in Dutch orange with tiger sleeves.
It's like tiger rug sleeves, isn't
it? Tiger rug sleeves, yes. Yeah. Peter, help me out. Give me some other clues.
It's horrible.
You think that's horrible?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it does look like... I mean, it might be your printer, but it does look like someone's gone a bit too bright on the ink.
Well, no one would wear that, would they?
No. The advertiser, the sponsor, was several across there, is Bank DKI, which, if we knew about international banking, we'd probably be able to pinpoint the country. And there's also Liga Jarum written across there.
African.
It could be African, could be Asian. It says 2006, so that dates it, but as to who the badge is, I've no idea. Go on.
Okay.
Well, I'm guessing here this is either an Indian or Bengali thing because of the tiger thing, so...
Well, that's not a bad guess, actually. It's right. Not, but here you go. This is your shirt of the week for this week. It's a 2006-2007 home shirt of Indonesian Premier League side Persija Jakarta. Their rather catchy nickname is the Makan Kemayan, which translates to be the Kemayan Tiger. They play at the massive 77,000 capacity Gelora Bung Karno Stadium, which is in central Jakarta, which is the country's national stadium as well. Home matches often attract crowds of 50,000, whilst their fanatics, the Jackmania, as they're known, also travel in great numbers to away games. With the exception of games against local rivals Persib Bandung and Persebaya Surabaya, and the away fans are banned to prevent crowd trouble. You want to know about a couple of their current players? Oh, Christ. Niroguru Fakahajuman made his debut this season.
You're making this up now, aren't you? He's totally making it
made his debut this season in the number 23 shirt alongside a veteran midfielder Riksi Ramdhani Lestahu and legendary Indonesian
Phil, I hate you.
Bang Pangorius has made over 350 appearances, scoring 170 goals. There are no obvious links to players from the UK. And Persija Jakarta, after retiring from football in 1977, Ricky Marlowe bought a part share in a karaoke bar in Bali.
No, he didn't.
Thanks, Phil. Thank you.
And you can view that shirt and over 100,000 like it at oldfootballshirts.com. Phil has been for a long time our show sponsor, and we very much appreciate your support. Thanks, Phil.
Okay.
Is
he in France?
Yeah, he's in France at the moment.
He's drinking champagne.
That's terrible. He's not even going to be at the Amex.
No, he's not going to be. He wasn't at the Renf game, not at the Amex. Because him and his wife and a couple of others are drinking excessive amounts of champagne in Epernay, actually in the Champagne region. So, and happy birthday again then, Lou.
Okay. And just quickly before we move on, we've just got to announce that on Friday the 3rd of May, there is a night bike ride called Bike Balls, which is an Albion community event. Basically, it's a ride from the Amex to the I-36. It's £15 to do it, and
this is the one that we were talking about where we were saying it's actually freewheeling, but if we did this last night that would take a lot of cycling, wouldn't it? Because that was pretty blowy last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, coming off the seafront. It took me out forever to walk down it.
And actually, did you say you came off your bike?
Yeah.
Was that down to pickledness, or was that down to the wind, or a little bit of both?
Something like that.
He probably had the wind.
Yeah, prepared, yeah. Okay, well, we are joined here by Gary Jack, who's starring in the one-man play. He shot his score during the Brighton Fringe this year. Gary, tell us about it.
Well, it's a play about... Delia Johnson. No, sorry. It's a play that's inspired by Peter and watching Peter play from Hereford up until... you played in under-21? I'll tell you all about your career, the early part of your career. England under-21 game against Norway, and it covers that period. So about 15 months, but it's four lads. Although it's a one-man show, it's four lads and their support of Brighton and following Peter.
Okay, so you're playing all four?
All four parts.
Go on. How's
women?
This work then?
No, there is one woman part, one female part, the landlady of the Talbot in Mansfield.
Wow. What do you know about the Talbot in Mansfield, Peter?
I'm not saying anything.
Yeah, well, that was a game that you got kicked to blazes in. Sorry, that was a game that you got kicked to blazes in, and I think. Ian Mellor ended up in hospital at A&E as well with bruised kidneys on the same day. This period is the time that...
Didn't we win 1-0?
You did.
Cat?
Yeah, you scored just before half-time.
Oh, I scored, OK.
Catlin scored a 20-yard curler.
Yeah. Catlin scored a goal, blimey.
First ever goal.
I think he's only ever got one.
Yeah. He never scored in the 217 games he played for Coventry, but he did get one in the 3 years he was at Huddersfield.
Right.
Sorry, that's a line from the play. So hence I know it. I thought that I know these stats. I just reading the lines.
A nice little sort of like teaser, nice little spoiler. Never hurts, you know. So what made you? I mean, is this something you've written, or what made what brought the project about?
It's a play that I've always wanted to write because it was my youth going to the Goldstone and watching what was going on there. So it was always a play that I wanted to write. But it came to a head. My father passed away a couple of years ago and he was suffering from Alzheimer's. And one of the last things he said to me was, he could hardly speak. And he said, "He were great, that lad we used to cheer on, scored all them goals." He was talking about you. And I thought, well, hold on, this has had such an impact on me. What about other people? So started talking to other people. And loads of people who'd never seen football, if you say he shot, he scored, they'd chant the next line to it. And it touched the whole of the county. You know, and it may only be parochial, it may only be Sussex. But certainly around mid-Sussex, around Brighton, there was a part of our growing up that was defined by something. You know, the goals that we saw. Young lad from who played for Burton Albion coming down as a 20-year-old and scoring all these goals. But it was a completely different era. And I suddenly started thinking about this era. It was a time where if somebody drew blood, if a defender drew blood, you get a free kick. And you'd only get them booked if they was ABH and sent off was GBH.
Could kick you from behind as
you
Everton.
Could. Yeah. Exactly. And imagine the fun you'd have now if you
can
were...
Can I just say that the massive grin that Peter had on his face, when he said, "Yeah, you can kick him from behind."
Well, I think he was on the receiving end of more than he was giving. Yes. But
it was just... Like I say, in my day... If I got tackled and I stayed down a bit too long, your own players would be saying, "Get up, you tart." You know what I mean? Yeah. It's nowadays, they just roll and roll and keep rolling. It's ridiculous. Especially that Brazilian fella. Jesus.
So it was.
I was looking at a different era, a different way of playing football, and I just wanted to bring it onto the stage to sort of remind us and see if people were interested in that and anchoring it around. And when you think in terms of, you know, Peter growing up and we were growing up, we grew up with him. First year you played from Hereford through first calendar year, do you know how many games you played? You probably do. You probably read your own autobiography.
He wrote it.
Oh, well.
Games I played.
Consecutive games you played in the first year.
I don't know.
53 consecutive games in 12 months and scored 33 goals.
Wow.
You know, that's when
it's
you say...
It's selfish, isn't it?
But that's in an era where...
Is that league goals?
You've 33 goals in all competitions, so I think there were four in the cup, but over that period.
Sorry, Gary, I just have to say, I finally found someone who's outstatted AD. Finally.
I've got the stats there, actually.
but I started thinking in terms of 53 games. This is in the days before you get subbed after 60 minutes and somebody else, or sit on the bench.
It was one sub, wasn't it?
Yeah, one sub.
Yeah. And you never hardly ever got on.
You didn't get off.
And it was Jerry Ryan that came on, and usually for, you know... Well, it could have been anyone. It could have been the goalkeeper, but yeah.
And you played. And I don't know, but of those 53 consecutive games, I think you played all 90 minutes. So
more than likely.
So that's now. Compare it with now. So it's a different game, and I'm just trying to the joy that we had watching and going from such football meccas. You know, if you go to Hereford, Hereford to Shrewsbury to. Chester, Tranmere, some really Mansfield, fantastic. Well, that's the landlady at the Talbot.
That's right,
in Mansfield. She thinks
he's still looking sheepish. Every time you mention the Talbot in Mansfield, he looks very sheepish.
She's a big woman.
Is it something you've written and you've written, directed, starring, promoting?
It's written by it's our story, my story. We've got a playwright we work with, Anne Richards,
okay.
And she's written a previous football play which was called Girls with Balls, which was about the 1920. Dick Kern, ladies' side.
Well, that sounds interesting.
Oh, well, it was a good play. Yeah, no, and they in 1920.
Did you bring it down here as well?
We bought it. It was actually on at the Rialto. No, it wasn't. Yes, it was. It was on at the Rialto. Yeah, about 3 years ago on a big run.
Girls with Balls.
Girls with Balls.
Yeah, I've seen some of them.
Yeah. The landlady at the Talbot.
We're back in Jakarta again. Yeah.
So you bring it down here. So tell us about when, how, why, and how do we get tickets and everything?
Yeah, it's on in the festival. It starts on
the Fringe Festival.
The Fringe Festival. Yeah, 20th of May to the 2nd of June. It's at Sweet Works, the theatre under the little space underneath Sweet Works, which is next to the
Middle Street, isn't it?
Next to the Hot Pole.
Yes,
in Middle Street.
Yeah.
Nice little venue there that's working hard for the festival.
And how much are the tickets?
Tickets are £10 or concessions £8.
And how do you get hold of one?
He said, looking at this Fringe box office or through the venue box office.
And it runs from the 20th of May to the 2nd of June, I believe.
20th of May to the 2nd of June.
And through the magic of broadcast media, we can actually offer a pair of tickets to one of the shows. You choose as to when. The Albion Roar is offering these two tickets for He Shot, He Scored, It Must Be Peter Ward. So just answer us this question. Now, we all know, and Gary's just been mentioning it, that Peter Ward scored his first goal for the Albion against Hereford United. But who did Peter Ward score his last goal for the Albion against? And we're talking about first team games, could be league, could be cup. But who did Peter score his last goal for the Albion against?
And where do you send the answer to?
So if you can send the answer to, email it to thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk. We'll have a closing date of Saturday the 3rd of May. And if you get your answer to us then, and we'll draw, we'll make a random draw of one of the correct answers. So the question is, who was Peter Ward's last goal for the Albion scored against?
There we go. And we'll ask that question again at the end of the show. Now, Peter, I mean, Gareth was saying there about the society thing of your impact, basically. And you feel that every time you come here, there is so much love and warmth everywhere you go, isn't there?
It was a great time, you know, and just people have great memories, like myself. It was just a fantastic time. We had great camaraderie with the fans. We drank with them. Like, I think if I was playing in these times where there's a lot of social media, I'd probably be in jail. but it was just great time.
Are we
just
back to Mansfield again?
No. But it was just a great time to be an Albion player and as fan.
I mean, there was that zeitgeist at the time. When I first started watching, my first ever game was in September 78, but I was well aware of the Albion from about a couple of years previously. I wrote this. In the theatre show that Peter was talking about, I wrote some notes about the first time my dad took me there. And it was along the lines of the first, you know, we'd be sitting watching the wrestling. My nan's spitting venom at the TV at Giant Haystacks and Mick McManus and Jackie Palo and all that lot, waiting for the results to come up. And I had no idea who Brighton were playing, but I always saw the top of the table. I think it was kind of Hereford and Cardiff and Wrexham were always near the top of the table, near us, and what have you. But it was a zeitgeist, you know. It was a great time. This firebrand, Alan Mullery, had just taken over, you know, as manager. We had this young upstart, this cocky young upstart, banging in the goals. You had Brian Horton knocking lumps out of everyone, friend and foe, you know, and everyone was his heroes. And we had this beautiful kit of blue and white stripes with the buck to, you know, stripe down the sleeves.
I'm there.
Absolutely.
I've been transformed.
Absolutely. And there was a knitted
thing. I still have mine.
Yeah. And you wash it once and it'll shrink, go from large to small in no time at all. The blue shorts and the white socks with blue, you know, this stuff is, it takes me back to being an 8-year-old again. And you know, when Gary was talking about, you know, his first times and his heroes, and you want to be, you know, and even Attila wrote a book, you know, and I'll be Kit Napier.
Well, the thing is that you mentioned Attila there, but I mean, every time I think of Peter, I think punk rock and think of Rob, which is from his poem.
And glam rock.
Yeah.
Well, you were a bit of a glam rocker anyway, weren't you?
Oh yeah, of course I was. Yeah. Who was your platform shoes and long hair.
Who was your favourite band of the time?
I've always loved Bowie, so, right. You know,
there we go.
Roxy Music.
But I mean, actually, on this, AC/DC. Let's take it back to sort of like your early days then, Gary. I know you mentioned it earlier, but I mean, did you have a sort of similar zeitgeist, or did you have to wait for Peter Ward and Brian Horton and Alan Mullery to turn up to really get into the club? Or, you know, were your heroes really from when you started watching them?
Well, they were the generation before Peter's, or the players before. Kenny Beamish, Willie Irvine, that sort of thing, which isn't long before, yeah, it's 2 or 3 years, but it's sort of ingrained as part of you for the football. But all of a sudden, in that, what was it, 76, 77 season, there was a free-flowing football. We talk in terms now of parking the bus and two banks of four, but in those days the chant on the terraces was attack, attack, attack. And if you get
is now.
we hope. Yeah. Yeah. But this was, I mean, and to watch the free flowing football, and yeah, you had guys at the back that were going to stop it and play it 5-yard balls, but you had people that were going to then and set your thinking and get the pulse racing. You know, if the ball went wide to Mella, you start looking up, and if the ball went to Peter, yeah, the hairs on the nape of your neck would start tingling because something was going to happen, and you knew it was something. And what's more, you knew that the opposition were going to try and kick lumps out of him. They didn't care about the ball; they just cared about stopping him. Mm. You know, try to stop him, a drop of the shoulder, a feint of the hips, and the defenders will be beaten. But if they didn't beat them, then you're in agony for a little while.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Peter, obviously your career at Brighton is a magical period in your life, and you're still dining out on it now.
Sorry, mate, it's a magical period in our life as well. I mean, it's something for everyone, isn't it?
But you did leave the Albion, and you did go and play for Brian Clough, but that didn't quite work out so well for you.
Sometimes it did. He was... very strange man.
He sounded like Brian Clough when he said that.
Young man, that's what he said, yeah. Young man, the way you're playing, you must be retarded. He said that to Poskett. He said that to my...
someone.
Proctor.
Right.
Mark Proctor.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when, I think it was Danny Wilson, who was talking with Cloughy in his office, and a knock at the door, and it was Mark Proctor. And he said, "Oh, I didn't know you're busy, boss. I'll come back." He says, "What do you want?" "Oh, should I say, what do you want?" Yeah. And he said, "It's all right, I'll come back." He said, "What do you want?" He said, "I want a transfer." He says, "Done, F off." And that was it. He went the next day.
Oh, blimey. No, I suspect that, probably with all due respect, it was actually Peter Taylor who was the bigger fan of yours. I mean, he signed you twice, didn't he?
Yes, yes. I mean, when Cloughy had a little heart murmur on my last season, I mean, I played when Cloughy was away. Mm. And when I come back, I was sub. And John McGovern was back in the team. It was quite, you know, strange when Cloughy wasn't there that Taylor was in charge and I played.
Have you got round to reading? I mean, it's obviously something you were there and you were probably asked about it anyway, but have you read Spencer Vignes's book about Cloughy's time at the Albion?
Not yet, no. I've just got the book, actually.
Right, OK. I think you'll enjoy it, but then you're going to go, "No, it didn't happen. No, it didn't happen. No, it didn't happen."
You never know.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just... It was all. He didn't coach. He just got good players. Clough.
Yeah.
He just got players together, and that his team talk before we went out was, "Hold it, play it, hold it, play it, hold it, play it," and you just get louder and louder, and now go.
Yeah.
In different words.
So basically, what you're saying is Peter Taylor was really the power behind the throne, as it were.
Possibly, yeah. They were good together. You know, that's why he got. Taylor back from Brighton when he left, went to Leeds.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had nothing like the success apart that they did together.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as Al said, though, it was Peter Taylor that actually brought you to the Albion from Burton as well, and his eye for a player and some of the players he brought you in. He brought Nobby in. I mean, it was one hell of a team he was building here, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Muller's just inherited that good team and brought a couple of others in. And
what, Lawrence?
I mean, Loro. Yeah, I mean, that was...
You can argue it was Taylor's team, but it did need the fine-tuning.
Yes, it did.
Let's put this with a historical context. Do you think that team could have got promoted without Lawrenson?
Possibly, but no. I mean, he was the pin, you know, at the back. And then later, he played defence like a defensive midfielder and coming through, you know.
But he was, you know, he was the real catalyst. He was the kind of the final link that actually sort of took us from potentials
play,
to almost certain.
He could play midfield, defender. He's a great defender.
Well, I mean, obviously people know Mark Lawrenson from his whining on Match of the Day and what have you. But and you know, a few people remember him from Liverpool. But, you know, there's some who are not quite old enough. And I only saw him once. But tell us about Lawrenson as a player. I mean, you're saying he was the linchpin. But how good, did you know, he was only about 19 or 20 at the time. How good was he then?
I remember when we played Preston and he was marking me.
Yeah.
I did score a couple, but
he
was really tough to play against, you know.
Yeah.
And then when he came to us, he just took over as the leader at the back. I mean, we had Graham Cross originally, who was from Leicester. Mm-hmm. He was superb. He was getting on.
Yeah.
And Loro came in and he just took over. You had Loro at the back, you had Nobby in the middle running things. Mm-hmm. And I mean...
I suppose that was a hell of a spine, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, actually, there's a debate that's been going on through the ages, it seems, but who's the best Albion player at the time? Some people will say Peter Ward, some people will say Mark Lawrenson. Who was it? Look, no pressure.
I think it's different positions, isn't it? You know, Loro won score as many as me, and I won't be able to defend as well as him.
Yeah.
I couldn't defend my life, to be honest. But it was just a whole team concert. Everyone worked for each other. Everyone went out together. Everyone got drunk together.
Yeah,
laid
so,
together.
So as a fan, Gary, what did you see on the pitch then?
Of that era?
Yeah.
Oh, a team that would excite and a team that wanted to play together.
You could see the togetherness.
Yeah, undoubtedly, it was. They had individuals who were special, but recognised that they were stronger collectively.
Mm.
I mean, that may well be looking with the benefit of hindsight and trying to be a little bit too academic about it, but they were always a unit. If there was problem, then somebody would be standing
up.
We
were a team.
Yeah, you were. And,
everyone was in together.
But Nobby Snyder. Brian Horton snarling at somebody because they've kicked somebody, you know, one of his mates. You know, there's somebody there that's going to stand for you.
Yeah, I just remember, you know, a few months ago we had Chris Catlin and Andy Rawlings on the show, and hopefully that we'll catch up with them this afternoon as well. That'd be great. But I mean, Catlin's take on it was that team was so good. I mean, I think he's a bit disrespectful towards Mullery, but he said that team was so good. He said Dora Bryan could have been the manager and it'd have got us up.
Probably.
What did
we had leaders on the field,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was taken over from Muller's once, you know, he's in the stands, and then on the pitch you had players who just knew the game, knew what we had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And whether I listened to him or not, I know you don't.
Well, that's what I was about to say. So given that, you know, bearing in mind that Catlin himself was getting long in the tooth himself at the time, you know, with that attitude, feeling that actually the players he's got around him, whether it's the experienced one or even the younger ones or whoever it might be, I mean, he was praising Sully like you wouldn't believe. You know, the best winger he's ever scored, and you think, what on earth is he doing in the third division? So what did, I mean, I guess that Mullery was there for when the times weren't so good. I mean, what did Mullery bring to the whole thing?
Camaraderie.
Yeah.
He came in and he got rid of a few bad pennies.
Yeah.
And then that was it.
He just fine-tuned everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because Mullery himself was quite young at the time, wasn't he? He was late 30s,
yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah. Mid-30s, 34, yeah. 35, I think.
That's why Murray's older than he is now.
He was good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he came in, he just stopped playing. He's probably better than most of our players.
One of the most contentious decisions, I think, at the time was getting rid of Binney, because he went sold Binney to Exeter in that first
that
5 or 6 weeks.
Was
well,
so good.
He was, but... Yeah, how long was he going to last with the amount of times he was kicked? You know, would he play all season? As it was, he played forever and a day.
So what are your legs made of? I know it's
titanium.
Steel these days, yeah.
Titanium, the names, yeah. Titanium. They are. Jesus.
Yeah. But, okay, well, I mean, Peter, you did actually, of course, come back to the Albion on loan. Now, I mean, what's the story? Because, I mean, there is a story like, doing the rounds that Cluffy said to you that I didn't play in an FA Cup final, so and neither were you, young man. Is that true?
It is true. I was on loan, and I scored the winner at Newcastle.
Scored at Newcastle, didn't you?
Yeah.
You did
and
that,
then
yeah.
Went through the rounds, and then before the fifth, or I played at Liverpool. Mm-hmm. Was that the fourth or fifth round? It was the fifth round.
Mm-hmm.
And then my loan period was up, and Brighton wanted to keep me until the end of the season, and we were having a great cup run, and he did. I went, listen, I want to stay at Brighton. And he said, son, he said, I've never been to a cup final, neither are you. You'll be back at Nottingham.
But you didn't actually play again for Forest.
No, I left. I said, you can, you know, in no such words, you can shove it up your...
And that's when you first went to America?
Yeah, I went to Seattle, yeah.
So how did that come about?
Alan, we'd not played well against Derby. And... or somebody, so he'd put me, Robertson, Kenny, but about five or six first teamers in the reserves. It was actually he put them in the reserves against Man City reserves, and we won 7-0, and I got 5, and Alan Hinton was in the crowd, who was the coach of Seattle, who played at Derby and Nottingham and that, right, and so he asked Cluffy if I could go for the summer. And that's when I'd come back on loan. After the loan, I did play a little bit for Forest, but I went to America with Alan Hinton. We had a great season there. I came back, and I got back into England on the Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Cluffy said, you've got to come in, so on the Friday, and then you're in the squad to go to Tottenham. We were playing Tottenham on the Saturday. So, and we were leaving Saturday morning. And so I was sub. I mean, I just got off the plane a couple of days before, jet lagged, and I was sub at Tottenham. After about 15 minutes, somebody got injured, so I had to go on. And I played pretty well, actually. I think it was on Match of the Day. I think we lost 1-0, perhaps. I remember kicking Clements. I was late for the ball. He chased me. It was quite funny. But that was it. And then I said to him, I don't want to stay here with you. And so I went back to America.
All right. Yeah. I mean, you've had quite the tour of duty over in the States. I mean, you were at Seattle Sounders, and obviously you went to Canada as well, so at Vancouver Whitecaps. Yep. The indoor league you played in for Cleveland Force and Tacoma Stars.
And Baltimore and Wichita.
Tampa Bay Rowdies, Wichita Wings, Baltimore Blast, all these. And Tampa Bay Terror.
Yes, I was 41 playing with them.
I don't think you can get away with that name nowadays, could you?
No, it was Sharks.
But what was this difference between the indoor league then? Tell us about that.
It was just six-a-side, indoor, like very similar to ice hockey.
Rollerball.
You just didn't get whacked against the ball. Well, you did, but it was just fast action. And you had like two lines like hockey, and your first line would go on and play, and within a minute and a half, because it's all fast, you couldn't stay on much longer. And you'd switch on the fly, and it's great. When I was in Cleveland, you had the Star Wars music, and Darth Vader you scrum out before the game, and the crowd went nuts.
Well, it was the Cleveland Force.
Yes, correct. And it was just that, but a couple of years of doing that, they got sued by Spielberg.
Lucasfilms,
because we had to come up with a new monster and a new song, but it was very similar, and the monster was very similar to Darth Vader, so it didn't really matter.
But I mean, obviously you loved America so much, you've made your home over there.
Yeah, well, I stayed in Tampa because, to be honest with you, Loro was the reason I went to Tampa. He was in Tampa with Rodney Marsh, and I got a call. He said, Wardy, he said, come be Tampa. He said, I'd just finished at Wichita. I was back to Tacoma. I was going back to Tacoma. Oh, I was at Tacoma. Mm. And he said, come down and come and play here. I said, okay. And it was just a few months summer fling. And I thought
back to Mansfield again.
And I just thought it was too. Whenever we played against Tampa, or Jacksonville, or Fort Lauderdale, it was so hot, But living there, your blood thins, I think, and you just. I mean, it's nice waking up every day, and it's nice and sunny, 80s, except for like 6 weeks of the year.
That's why you're so cold last night.
Oh, God, it was cold last night.
Okay, well, let's just move on, because obviously we've got a massive game today. It's Newcastle United at home. Is it do or die today? I mean, with the last two games we've got.
Go on, Gary.
Well, it's not do or die, no, because there's games after it. But
but bear in mind the games away at Arsenal, Manchester United.
Huddersfield last year, they drew with City.
Yeah.
Although City had already won the league.
Well, they might have already won the league this year, maybe.
No chance.
Go on, Gary. Go on, Gary.
Well, what would be nice is if we win and if Fulham win. Then we're sitting pretty. And the difference, that league is so close at the bottom that if that happens, suddenly you're thinking, actually, we've had a really comfortable season and we've ended up in a comfortable position. Mm. Let's hope. I personally would like to see us going for a win. Yes. And then that does us much more favours. 1 point doesn't make a great deal of difference from where we are at the moment, with 3 points and a better goal difference.
The way Arsenal are playing, we could get a point there, no?
Well, that's yes. Why not?
But I'm stating the bleeding obvious here, Pete. But it's like goals win matches, and that we've got to try. We've forgotten how to win.
We have to score. Yep.
Simple as that. Yeah.
I mean, we've got to try and get that muscle memory back and find out what it feels like to actually win. And that's what we've got to get ourselves somehow over the line.
I'm just thinking of the number of games recently. We've had so few shots on goal. We've had shots on goal, but, how many have been on target? Was it three over the past five games? That's just poor in its own right. Irrespective of getting a shot away, but getting a shot away on target.
If you don't shoot, you don't score.
So how are your knees, Pete?
I'll be ready.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, obviously we've got all of the 79 promotion team are going to be at the game today. So, I mean, obviously, hopefully, you know, you've got the captains like Nobby, who's been a manager.
I can imagine him just going in and balling that team out at the moment.
Yeah.
Let's because, you know, we're getting to the end of the show here. So just quickly, Pete, I mean, obviously the Newcastle game up there in 79 was important, you know, it was, and I think we would have probably done it if we hadn't won. But what was there a team talk, or was it just everyone knew anyway?
Everyone knew. I mean, Muller's didn't really have to say anything. It was, do you want to go into the top division or not? You know, it's, we had Nobby on the pitch. Loro didn't play. He was out, wasn't he, last few games? But Sutter's coming. I mean, everyone knew what we had to do. And look at that, we went 3-0 up at Newcastle. We didn't panic, we didn't...
Well, Mullery did.
Mullery did, yeah. But that was, you know, he was just so happy and nervous. It was just, he needed it. I mean, what a start, you know? So, that's what we need today.
Absolutely.
But there was a classic thing that Mark McGee did when he was the manager here, and he just put on the flipboard in the changing room. He basically said, right, well, where do you want to be playing next year? So, I mean, and he had...
It was like Carrow Road, Ellen Road, Hillsborough, or do you want to play at Torquay?
So, basically, it's just the same thing. Do you want to go into Barnsley next year, or do you want to go back to the New
Zealand? You don't have to be motivated.
No, you shouldn't have to be.
You have to, you know, you're self-motivated.
If you're not motivated, you shouldn't be playing for the...
No,
you shouldn't be
all.
Wearing the stripes.
No.
Okay, I think we're getting to near the end of the show. So, Gary, just one quick plug for your show.
It's called He Shot, He Scored. It's on the 20th of May to the 2nd of the June at Sweet Works in Middle Street. Tickets are £10, and it's about the 1975-76 season.
Who's that good-looking fella on the picture?
No, that's me. That's that issue. And
yeah, what happened?
And just as a quick reminder, if you want to enter the competition to win 2 free tickets for that, who did Peter Ward score his last goal against while playing for the Albion?
And how do you enter?
And enter by emailing thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk. Gary, you want to say something?
No, I'm just going to say I thought I knew the answer, but I don't anymore.
I know
we don't. Well, you're not allowed to answer right now.
No, that's true.
But I mean, that is it, though. That's all we've got time for this week. So thank you, of course, to Alan Wares. Thank you to Gary Jack. Thank you to Peter Ward.
Cheers, let's get a win today.
Absolutely. Yes. I'm AD Packham, and...